Heard about Anchor? It is the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your own phone or computer. Anchor will also distribute your podcast so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more podcast platforms. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started today. Sometimes, folks, with football, it's an interesting sport. And if you guys remember, for episode 100, you can, if you're watching on YouTube, you can see him with me, Keegan Stiefel, was a part of an episode called Why Do You Love Football? And I think last night, as I put the graphic up here, I think last night pretty much encapsulated why we love this game.
Yeah, and weekends like that, they come around every 15 years, I'd say, where it's just – every game's great. You get the opportunity to watch all of them. You know, divisional weekend is that weekend usually. But we haven't had a two-day stretch like that in a very long time. Nothing but bangers after bangers for games. The storylines have been great, everything. You're absolutely right. That's why you love football.
Exactly. Like, you look at every game. I don't think there's ever been a weekend, or at least I can't remember, where every single game has ended with a walk-off fashion. It would have been cool to see like a game-winning field goal, because part of me always thought – you know, when the Bills had a 20, when it was 26-21, I'm like, okay, if the Bills get a touchdown here, Chiefs are going to march down and get the field and get a field goal and make it 29-28. Just to, like, I know last week was rough for us, but to, like, truly see Bills fans' hearts get ripped out at the end. I always had a feeling that's what was going to happen, but just had to wait till overtime.
Yeah. You know what? For the Bills fans that I follow and that I've interacted with, they were all very cordial about the loss, which was surprising because usually they're, you know, it's brutal for them. Yeah. So it was interesting to see that in the most heartbreaking fashion, they got their hearts ripped out and they were kind of just okay with it. It was very interesting.
Yeah, exactly. I know I had the same thing too from Bill's Twitter. I saw a lot of that too, where it wasn't like so much, man, like we're so pissed, like we got so far and yet it was like heartbreaking. It was more like, it is what it is. It sucks. It's like kind of like us in a way last weekend, in a sense, you know, where it's like you kind of accepted your fate. You didn't like, you don't want to dwell on it. You don't want to deal with it. You kind of just accepted, hey, take the loss. It sucks, but you know what? We'll just move on.
Yeah, for sure. It was after that weekend, I'd say, since they were the last game, just after that weekend, seeing all the other fan bases get their hearts ripped out, I'm sure it was just like, it was bound to happen eventually, you know, like Bills fans are used to it by now too, but
yeah.
Lots of talk about how, you know, the overtime rules suck and all that stuff. I don't know. For the fan, I think the games ended the way they were supposed to end. I wasn't upset about any of it.
No, neither was I. I always think with overtime where people are mad about it, it's like, oh, everyone should get each possession. I'm like, maybe the defense could, you know, do their part a little bit more just to, like, get the stop. But at the same time, too, you knew last night was not that wasn't happening.
Yeah, no, it's more than half the game or less than half the game because special teams, but it's half the game. You got to play defense. And to watch Ryan Kieran, who works with me at Pat's Pulpit, he tweeted out, it's so funny to see, you know, 2 minutes left in the game, they're just firing touchdowns. They're scoring in like 20 seconds, no problem. And then as soon as overtime starts, it's like, all right, we got to establish the run. We got to hand the ball off for 2 yards, you know? And it's like this complete 180 once overtime starts. And usually you see that and you saw it at the beginning. And then the Chiefs are like, oh, wait. We can just go score right now. Like we just did it 3 times. So, you know, they walked right down the field and scored to win the game. But it was crazy to see the turn of events because at halftime, the game was, you know, projected to go under. Yeah. And then, you know, everybody went buck wild towards the end.
I almost live bet the over. It was at like 57.5. And I was like, I'm going to take it. And I was like, nah, I kind of backed off. I had a pretty good day at the book yesterday. So it was what it was. But the only thing I got to say about this weekend, look, is that I think was Tennessee a bit of a fraud one seed? I don't know, but it just wasn't a good day for them. The Green Bay San Fran game, I was like half watching it because I was watching the fights, but when you look down, you realize like the block punt happened, and that's a game where special teams comes into play. And if Minnesota doesn't hire DeMarco Ryan, they're doing something wrong.
Yeah, for sure.
And then yesterday, I just want to say this quickly. I don't know if it was me, but that Tampa-LA game reminded me a lot of the 2015 AFC Championship game.
I could see that.
Yeah. You know, Brady's having a bad day.
I think that game, for me, felt like do you remember, I think it was 2013 regular season against, it was New England versus the Broncos. And at halftime, they were down, what was it, 24 points at halftime? It was like the same deficit.
Yeah, 24.
And they came back and they dominated in the second half. But Tampa Bay didn't really do that. It was kind of like LA giving the game away. Tampa Bay didn't look good for, I don't know, 50 minutes of that game. And then the final 10 minutes, they looked great, obviously. Defense was forcing turnovers. Offense was scoring at will. But, like, and it's the same thing where people made the comparison to Super Bowl 51, where it was like, oh, yeah, you know, Brady's done this before. That game was so different from Super Bowl 51 just because the Patriots played well in the first half in that game. It just kind of fell apart at different turning points, but they always played well. They were never outclassed. Tampa Bay was getting outclassed yesterday throughout 50 minutes. And then every single thing that could go right went right. And eventually, you know, they tied the game. But I think it was different than anything we've seen, maybe other than that Denver game.
Yeah, exactly. I remember that one. I think was that the Denver game where Gronk had that unbelievable one-handed touchdown?
I think that was a couple years later, but that was the game Wes Welker muffed the punt.
Yes.
And that was the turning point. Like, everything just avalanched for Denver at that point. And that was his first year in Denver, and it was this huge thing. But that game, that was Brady had a punt towards the end after when the Patriots went up. Brady punted the ball and pinned them down inside the five, and there was a fight. That was a memorable regular season game for sure.
Yeah, I remember that one just because I remember, too, like, I think Brady threw a pick early and they almost had a pick six, something like that. It was just, like, both those games were Murphy's Law. The only other thing I'll say about the LA-Denver game from yesterday was that if – I know some people were saying this, I agree with it. If what happened yesterday was Super Bowl 51 where Atlanta was just giving New England turnover after turnover, the Patriots win by, like, 20 points.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. That's not a close game. I think if you get – like – I'll always say this, and we can get into this in a minute, but I still say that the Hightower strip sack was a true turning point in that game. But I'm just saying, like, if stuff like that happened in that Super Bowl 51, excuse me, it's not going overtime. It's New England just absolute curb stomp.
Yeah, for sure. New England, from halfway through the third quarter, every single play went positively in their direction. So, except for the Julio catch.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, like, the real reason why you're here is just, like I said, obviously had to do the divisional recap quickly, go through all the games, what happened, a great weekend of football. Look, last weekend, I would say this, that was Murphy's Law game. It's just whatever could go wrong would go wrong. But in your honest opinion, do you view the season as a whole from when you look at it from when we first spoke, which was almost right before the start of the regular season to now? Do you view the season as a disappointment, or do you look at it and say, okay, here's what's wrong and here's how we address it?
So I don't view it as a disappointment. At the beginning of the year, I think my projection was 11-6 and they lose in the divisional round. I was wrong. They were worse than that, right? They went 10-7, lost in the wild card game. But to see what went wrong for them, which was early in the year, they just weren't a cohesive team and they didn't know how to finish, to late in the year where they were sluggish and tired and they looked old, to the playoff game where they were very clearly just not as talented as the other team. They were slower. They were older. You know, everything. Buffalo had the advantage in every, you know, category, I would say.
Yeah.
But then the 7-game win streak mixed in. It was almost like that's the team that we knew they could be at their peak. And then the way they looked in the playoffs was, yeah, that's kind of the team that we thought might come along because they've got so many older players. So though I was wrong, I was a game off on my predictions. I'd say they were the team I thought they were going to be the entire year. And for me, I think it's okay to move the goalposts a little bit throughout the year. Like when they're 2-4 and start the season, obviously you're not going to expect them to make the playoffs. I moved the goalpost back. I was like, all right, at this point, it's just getting Mac Jones ready for year two, finding the players that you know are going to be with you for the long haul, and then, you know, figuring out where you need upgrades. And then throughout that 7-game win streak, it was moving it like, oh, this team's pretty good. They finally figured it out. And like I said earlier, so it's the peaks and valleys of a season where I like to move the goalposts. I think that's okay to do. But, you know, in the end, I always end up right around the same spot where I started because that's just kind of how it goes. So I think they're exactly who we thought they were going to be. I think they're in a good spot. They know they have a quarterback they can win with. How far they can go with him, who knows? That's after next year. I think everybody will be confident in figuring out where they can go. Year two jump, all that stuff. But I think they're probably confident in moving forward, and I am too. I think they're going to be all right.
You know what? I'm the same. My ceiling was always around like the 10-7, 11-6 mark. Like 11-6 for me was like absolute best case scenario. I figured 9-8, 10-7 was the more realistic approach. But I was like you. After the Dallas loss, I was like, all right, look, just finish the year strong, get Mac, see what you can do with him, and then think about 2022. Then we started winning. Then I was like, okay, I wasn't thinking Super Bowl League. In the back of my mind, was I? Yeah, like you always keep that in the back of your mind. But I wasn't out here just preaching to the streets. You know, it's like Patriots are going, we're so back, we're this, we're that. No, like you have to look at it from a realistic standpoint as much as you want to put your fandom cap on. But I didn't. And then obviously Indy, I look at that. I was like, okay, you hit the rookie wall. Every rookie has a bad game. Buffalo, I think it was just same thing. Buffalo was the better team. And then the Jacksonville game, look, you're supposed to beat teams like that. I think that says – I know everyone looks at it like there. And I know Miami, a lot of people were mad because the Patriots just didn't look good. I just think their meter of, like, give a shit. I think they realized, hey, we're not winning the division. We already clinched. So if they lost that one, it is what it is. But in reality, I think if they had won Miami, and even though if they still tied with Buffalo, but Buffalo won, could it have helped them a bit? Yes. But I've been saying this, and you may not like it because obviously I know what school you're – obviously you're allegiant to UMass Lowell. But I
no,
do –
No. Not Lowell.
Oh.
Amherst. UMass Lowell is a fake UMass school.
Amherst. Excuse
me. I couldn't let you do it. I had to make the correction.
I apologize. UMass Amherst. But I view Buffalo's season and what happened last week as Michigan beating Ohio State. You know, and then they got absolutely walked by Georgia. Now, obviously, last night was different. But that's how I view the playoff game, where I view – and also, too, playing We Are the Champions is – to quote Big J, journalist and co-host of yours, Ryan Spagnoli, playing We Are the Champions after the wild card win, I was just like, okay, yeah, you're – two things. One, you're messing with the sports gods. And two, I still say that was their Super Bowl. But you know what?
We're not here for the Bills. It's a fireable offense by whoever hit the button to play that song. Get him out of there. Fire him. You can't do that.
Exactly. Playing Run This Town and everything like that, I'm like, okay, yeah, I understand that. But playing We Are the Champions, I don't even play that song. When the Patriots win their runs, I ban that song from my Spotify until they're hoisting the damn Lombardi trophy. I did the same thing with the Raptors in 2019, and I'm sure you did it the numerous championship runs you got to experience as a Boston sports fan. But back to New England. This season, I think it just kind of shows that, look, going into this offseason, we'll get into it in a minute, but there's hope to be realistic, but I'm not looking at this team to contend, be a serious contender for the playoffs for 2022. And what I mean by that is, am I going to go into next year expecting them, hey, there's a chance they're in Phoenix for the Super Bowl? Probably not. I'm looking at 2023 and 2024 as being their realistic windows to, you know what, make that push to be a very serious playoff contender in the NFL.
Yeah, I would agree. I think this year, Belichick said it himself, right?
Yeah.
Prior to the season, kind of in the offseason, that last year was a reset. They knew they weren't going to win a lot of games last year. They knew exactly what their roster was, which was a bad roster. I'd say it was one of the worst in the NFL. The fact that they won 7 games with that roster is, you know, astounding. But last year, or 2020 was a reset. 2021 was the beginning to the rebuild, and it was a hell of a start. And then 2022 is, here's the year to figure out what you're going to be. Like, yeah. Next year, they're going to figure that out. And they're not going to go and win the Super Bowl. Not, you know, 99% chance they don't.
No.
But going out there and competing with teams like Kansas City and Buffalo and Cincinnati even. Like, yeah. Who knows what Cincinnati's going to be. Tennessee, I'm sure Tennessee without injuries are a much better team than they ended up being. They were ravaged by injuries. So yeah. Competing with those teams on a week-to-week basis next year is something that I think is going to be important for them. And their schedule is going to help them do that, because not even just in the AFC, but the NFC. You've got Arizona, who everybody thought was a great team until they got curb stomped. And then, you know, you've got Green Bay, which who knows what Green Bay is going to be next year. But you're going to have opportunities to see where you're at. And I'm confident that they win more of those games than they lose next year, which is a good sign for the future.
Yeah, exactly. Go in there, be competitive. It's like like you said, when they have the games where you're playing a good opponent, don't get blown out. Don't have happen what happened to us week 16 against Buffalo. Even to who knows what Minnesota's going to be next year with new coaching staff. I'm really intrigued too, because we do play the AFC North, where all four teams, Cincinnati, I think we're trying to figure out what they are, but I'm sure Baltimore's going to be good again next year. Pittsburgh, we don't know. Cleveland, we don't know, but I feel like both teams can still maybe be contending for that wild card spot. I feel like there's going to be that, like how I view the AFC right now is you have your top two dogs, obviously, Buffalo, Kansas City. They'll probably be somewhere between 1 and 3. Tennessee probably be back, Cincinnati too. I think the Patriots are in that conversation, you know, the 5, 6, 7. Maybe if something happens and goes their way, hey, could they take a run at the division? Probably. I'm not saying they're going to win. I still think this is Buffalo's division unless, God forbid, something happens to Josh Allen. No, I'm not wishing anything on him. I'm just saying, look at us in 2008. That's what happened. But for next year, I'm just looking at, look, just keep making strides, just keep making improvements, and just be more consistent, you know, where if they had a year where they were 10-7, but say, for example, if instead of losing to Indy, they had lost to the Chargers, I think it would have looked a little bit better, you know, so where the losses are more broken up as opposed to even, say, Kansas City, you know, where they had a couple bad losses at the beginning of the year and then they finished strong. I feel like if you chop them up, like what Buffalo did this year, Buffalo never really had a losing streak. They just lost and then they came out and they won the next game. That's what I want to see from New England in 2022.
Yeah, for sure. And the AFC this year was so jumbled where – you know, we've all said it a million times. There were two good teams, then everybody else was kind of the same team that ended up in the playoffs. Like, Las Vegas is going to come down to earth next year. And probably Los Angeles as well. You know, both those teams competed with Kansas City in the division. Probably not going to happen again. We know what Kansas City is. They're if not the best team in football, they're the best team in the AFC. And you're not going to be able to win the division very many times with Josh Allen in it for how we've seen him play and what he is. You're not going to roll out of bed and win the division like you did for the past 20 years. So you're stuck in the 5-7 range because you're not going to win the division. But also, you get that 5 seed every year. You're the top wild card for the next couple of years. I think that's a good starting point for them, especially if you're hoping to, you know, get to a point where you can keep winning divisions again and stuff like that. You got to start with, you know, compete and get that wild card and win a couple playoff games, which is – they didn't win the playoff games, but they competed for the division all the way throughout the year this year, and they were in it to the end. So, like I said, it was a really good start for a rebuild.
That's the other thing, too. It's like you said, this was year two of a rebuild. It's not like it's anything else. And I'll also say this about 2020. If there's anyone else coaching that team I think wins maybe 4 games at most. Because, like, we should not have beaten the Jets, and we should not have – and the Cardinals kind of beat themselves in that game. But, No, all in all, look – successful season, could have gone better, yes, but at the same time, too, considering we didn't know what to expect at the same time, it is what it is, and look, we just got to take our losses and accept the fact that, hey, maybe in Orchard Park next year, there's a banner that says, beat our biggest rival in the AFC Super Wild Card weekend, but lost in the divisional round. Who knows?
Who knows? I doubt it. Jim Irsay doesn't own them, but their owners are stupid, too, the Pagulas, so who knows? Yeah.
Well, I just like the spectrum of, okay, you built the hockey team. You built the football team, but then you ran the hockey team into the ground. So it's very two different ends of the spectrum. That's all.
Yeah, they're not very good at what they do.
Exactly. So I just wanted to ask you, though, like for this team, obviously we talked about it a little bit, but when it comes to certain players and stuff, like I know you and Pat touched on it. What do you realistically see happening next year? Because, look, there's a lot of offensive players that will be on this team. There's a lot of the guys that are locked up. There's certain question marks I have to say with guys like, you know, James White, Nelson Agholor, and N'Keal Harry, just because you don't know if they're going to be traded or not. But all in all, who do you see, like, if you had to take the tough pill to swallow, who can you not see being on this team in 2022?
It's a good question. I don't think, you know, this is an easy one, but Hightower, McCourty, and Slater, I don't think all three of them are going to be back. You're going to see, you know, whether one of them retires, Slater, I don't think Slater's going to ever play for somebody else, but he's 36. Like, he's been playing forever. So I think you're going to see one of those guys leave. James White, who, as much as his injury hurt the team for a few weeks, you know, trying to figure out where they were going on offense, I do think it's probably time where you can figure out how to find that production elsewhere. And not rely on him so much. And when you do rely on him as much as they have in the past, it kind of makes their offense a little one-dimensional. Or not so much one-dimensional, but they're less explosive when your number one receiver is a running back, right? So
yeah,
I wouldn't be surprised if they let him move on. I also wouldn't be surprised if they signed him to a contract coming off an injury, knowing they can get him for cheap, you know. But I wouldn't be surprised if he moves on. Defensively, I would not expect J.C. Jackson to be back. If you do end up spending the money to have him come back, then you're signing like two or three more players plus your draft class, and that's it, right? It's a lot of money to have that guy come back. So I don't know that I expect him to come back. What I do think they're going to do is build up that middle class. Like, it's what they've always done. They always had the most guys in the NFL making $1 to $4 million a year. They got Adrian Phillips for a hell of a steal. If they can keep getting guys like that for $4 million a year, keep doing it, right? The Casey Haywards of the world, where he's a good cornerback. He's not a number one cornerback, but he's damn solid. Grab a guy like that. John Jones is coming back from injury. Jalen Mills showed that he could be a number two corner. He could be effective as a number two corner. You've got guys taking leaps in year two. There are a lot of rookies this year that either straight up didn't play, like Cameron McGrone or Ronnie Perkins, and then guys that they showed so much, and then what's the next step, like Christian Barmore, Ramondre Stevenson. If they take another step, if they take that huge year two leap, those guys are Pro Bowl-type players. That's how good they were. So I don't think you're going to see a lot of roster turnover. I think you're going to see a lot of rookies, a lot of young players, and a lot of middle-class guys.
Exactly. It's kind of like the Patriot way, if you will. A lot of the guys, you don't ask much from them. Come in, do your job, and just, you know what, don't expect a lot out of them, but what you get from them, like, they're going to give you good. Like, also, too, I'll say this, an Adrian Phillips signing was a good wake up to on New Year's Day. I agree with you. Like, I think Hightower for me would probably be the hardest one to, like, let go. Not for football reasons. Obviously, he's older, but he's just been one of my favorite Pats, just leader on and off the field. Same with Devin McCourty. If McCourty's back, I would expect maybe like a vet minimum kind of deal. And I do think Slater retires. I do agree with you, but I will say this about Slater. I will die on the hill that he belongs in Canton. I know Edelman, there was some mixed debates, but Matthew Slater belongs in Canton.
Yeah, he's the greatest special teamer of all time. People say Steve Tasker. It's wrong. That's incorrect. It's Matt Slater. You know, he's 36 years old. He was first team or second team All-Pro this year. Like, he's still doing it at a very high level. So if he wants to come back, it's up to him.
Yeah.
If he wants to, he'll be back. The Patriots will have no problem signing him. And he's the kind of guy where a veteran minimum deal is probably fine for what he brings to the table. And I'm sure him and his agent or whoever's negotiating the contract agrees. Hightower, when you brought up Hightower, reminded me of Juwan Bentley. That's another guy. He's gone. But yeah, with a Bentley gone and he's your number two, you know, off-ball linebacker, when that guy leaves, that opens up a spot for a guy like Cam McGrone, who has the tools and is young enough to be a superstar. He's everything. If you built a linebacker, he's pretty much everything except for maybe you'd add an inch. You'd add an inch and like 10 pounds. But other than that, he's exactly what you need. Raekwon McMillan tore his ACL. Who knows at this point in his career? You know, it's his third knee injury, second ACL. Like, who knows if he's going to be able to come back from that? But he was good enough to make the roster and to make them give him a contract extension with a torn up knee. So you've got two guys there that can replenish the middle of your defense, and where you can feel probably not thrilled about it, but comfortable with who they are as players.
And then the one question I want to ask you as well is, where do we see Chase Winovich go from here? Because I don't know what happened to him during the season, but the fact that he was inactive for the wildcard game, I think, speaks a lot louder than a lot of people will think or want to believe.
Yeah, having him and Josh Uche on the roster is kind of a waste of a spot, I'd say. It sucks to say because they're both great pass rushers. They're both really good at what they do. But in the Patriots system, it just doesn't work. Like, you can't just rush the passer and expect to see the field, because they've got a guy like Dietrich Wise who can do everything. Not as effectively, but he can do everything well, and that's what the Patriots look for. So I don't think you see both of them on the roster. Uche is so young and so athletic that you can find ways to get him on the field if you really need to. So I would trade Chase Winovich for what you can get for him, because what he's going into the last year on his contract, what you can get for him in terms of trade value is going to far out exceed the 50% special team snaps and the 10% defense snaps and 2 sacks a year, right? Like you can get a lot more for him as a trade piece than you can as a player in this system. I think a team like Houston, who they love bringing in former Patriots, and they don't have a ton of talent on their roster, just getting a talented guy who's going to play his ass off. And they've always had a guy in that role, like a Bernardrick McKinney did it for a while, where he was just an off-ball player or on-ball player. You know, trade him to Houston for a fifth-round pick, see what you can get for it, right? I do think – it's harsh to say, but I do think it's a waste to have both those guys on the roster because they do the same thing, and you don't need more than one of those guys on the team.
You know, that's very fair. It's just like I said, I feel like after a while, like – you start to see players like figure out exactly what they are, and we kind of know now with right. Chase Winovich what exactly he is. Going back to J.C. Jackson, look, I would love to see him back in a uniform. Obviously, you would, but realistically, if I believe his franchise tag is like $17 million, and he's we only have $27 million in cap this year. Obviously, it's still a lot of money compared to what a lot of teams have. Look, we're not in a Green Bay situation. Hell, we're not in a New York Giants situation when six guys are making 60% of your cap. Right. But I think this year we have to make a lot of logical moves and smart moves that are going to, like, look at the long-term window of this team. Like, don't look at the now. Don't bring in guys to win now. Look at, like, guys that are going to help contribute, whether it be 22, 23, 24, and beyond. I'm not saying lock guys up to, like, deals for them, but you know what I mean. Like, get guys on cheaper 2 to 3 year contracts.
Yeah, you saw Cincinnati do it this year with Eli Apple and Von Bell and guys like that where – they just signed middle of the pack guys and they were like, go out there and you're our number one corner, you're our number two corner, whatever. It's worked. They're in the AFC championship game. So you can do that. You can play the cheap game, especially at corner where as much as they've been bad at drafting cornerbacks, especially in the second round, like it's a running joke at this point. They're up to like 7 second round corners who haven't played more than 3 years. They just go and find them in free agency in undrafted free agency, and they grab a superstar, and they've done it multiple times. So I would be very comfortable with them just being like, all right, we're going to go sign 2 cornerbacks off the street. Let's say Casey Hayward and, you know, some slot corner. We're going to sign them. We're going to have a 4-deep rotation. We're going to bring in some undrafted free agents, see if any of them stick. I think that's a recipe for success in the secondary, especially with Kyle Duggar, who's turning into a really, really good safety, Adrian Phillips, who is the most solid player on the team, I'd say. There's no one who does their job as well as Adrian Phillips does his. So I think the secondary is going to be all right if they don't re-sign J.C. Jackson. Now, of course, if you do, great. Go get him a pair or a partner on the other side. Let Jalen Mills play more of a DB role than a corner role. You've got Miles Bryant and John Jones in the slot. Now you're looking at a great secondary. Maybe Devin McCourty comes back. Who knows? But I think either way, they're going to be okay. They'll know how to fix that secondary, which is something they need to do because it was bad down the stretch.
Yeah, exactly. That's the one thing, too. Like, even we saw, for example, the Jonathan Taylor run at the end of the game, which I'll admit in that game, seeing them lose that way was better, knowing we were down 3 already compared to if we had the lead and then there was that big run, because that would have been even more heartbreaking. But no, I do agree with you. The only thing I have to say in the secondary, as long as Joe Dwan, I don't even want to say his name correctly, Williams is on the team, that's all I care about. And then as for the linebacking core and the defensive line, I think it'll figure itself out. I think Matt Judon may have been a mix of maybe some afterthoughts with after effects with COVID, or teams figured out, hey, if we neutralize him, we get in there. But I'm not worried about a guy like Judon. I'm more worried about like all the other pieces and all the other stuff with the defense we were talking about, like the secondary and like the linebacking core.
Yeah, like I said, they can figure that. Sorry, I had to reconnect my microphone. They can figure that stuff out, right? They've done such a good job over the years of, you know, here's the guy at this position, and not even position, but a guy on the ball. They've got it, Matt Judon. That's their guy. What can you fill in around him? I think there's a ton of guys in the draft in second, third round. You grab one, he's a starter right away. You've got Dietrich Wise, Lawrence Guy, Devon Godshaw. They're all under contract for the next 2 years. The defensive line is going to be okay. At linebacker, do you have the guy? I don't know. It depends on if you classify Matt Judon as a linebacker, but he's already – I've kind of resigned the fact that he's a defensive lineman in my mind. At linebacker, do you have the guy? Maybe. Like, maybe Cam McGrone can become that guy. I'm super high on him, as you know. But And if you don't, go and get one. Go and get the guy who can be your number one guy and then just fill in the pieces around him. They've done that for so long at every position where it's here's the number one piece and then we're just going to fill in things around him. And that's the spot that they're in. They're almost forced to do that this offseason with the cap space situation and the amount of players that they have on the roster already. And that's kind of a perfect spot for Belichick as well, where he figured out the hard part. He got a quarterback and he's got talent everywhere. It's just, you know, finding where the pieces fit. There's nobody better in the business at doing that than him.
Exactly. Then the only other thing offensively I want to talk about quick, actually a couple things. Offensive line, do you bring back Trent Brown or do you let him walk? Because that's the only thing I'm trying to figure out too, because Cam and then even to like Michael Owen, who had a solid rookie year, kind of like, I don't know if he fell out of Belichick's good graces or what exactly happened there, but it's just kind of weird when you see like someone who's been good and then for all of a sudden they just don't see the field.
I'll start with Owen. I don't think he fell out of his good graces. I just think they see how valuable he is as a sixth guy. You can plug him in literally anywhere. Also, you can use him as a jumbo tight end. And for as little as they used it in the playoff game, or even down the stretch, yep, he was running at like 20% of snaps. It's still so, like, have that. And the offensive line was never the problem throughout the year. So I think they were fine with just being like, hey, listen, you were starting, but we figured out something where we've got five offensive linemen that – work really well together, and then you're so valuable as the sixth guy, where if you were playing and Ted Karras was the sixth guy, he's not bringing the same thing. He's not as athletic as Mike Onwenu is. Yeah. And he's not as big, and he's not as strong. He's kind of a step below him on everything. It's weird to see that guy start and then the other guy be a reserve player, but you get more value that way, right? So
yeah,
I think that's why the season ended that way. Ted Karras, I believe, is a free agent.
He only signed a 1 year. Sorry to cut you off. It was 1 year because remember that was the whole we didn't know if Andrews was coming back.
And then Andrews re-signed for like four. So, you know, maybe Ted Karras walks. I'm sure somebody would love to give him a ton of money, and I'm sure he'd love to take it. Yes. It didn't work out in Miami, but maybe it works out somewhere else. So if he walks, then you just slide Mike Onwenu into that left guard spot, and you're good until, you know, ultimately an injury is going to come along. But you figure that out when you get there. And then at tackle, I think this is the best tackle class we've seen in a while, like 5 or 6 years. A lot of really good tackles, and a lot of guys where you can get a tackle in the second round, plug him in at right tackle, and you'll be fine. So I think they probably do that. I'm super into the draft right now, obviously, just because that's where we are in the year. But I've kind of resigned myself to the fact that they're going to trade out of the first round. They're going to pick up extra capital in the second. They're going to draft the tackle. They're going to draft a defensive lineman, and they're going to build inside out. That's where my brain's at. So I would say Trent Brown, if he wants to come back on a cheap deal, sign him, draft and develop somebody to replace Wynn after his contract runs out next year, or draft somebody, plug him in at right tackle, give Wynn an extension, and then you're all set. So they're going to go one of the two ways, just whether or not Trent Brown's willing to take the a cheap deal, which I think he will be. I don't think he's going to be super coveted because he was just okay. He wasn't the all-world player he was in 2018, so we'll see. But whichever way they go, I think they'll be all right.
You know what? I honestly agree with you with that when it comes to Brown and Wynn, because I feel like, yeah, you can get someone to develop him, and then you can let either guy walk, and it's not the biggest deal in the world. Now, obviously, Trent Brown's a better player than Isaiah Wynn in my mind, but look, at the same time, too, if they go to Trent Brown and they say, hey, we'll keep you here, give you maybe a bit of a cheap deal. It is what it is. And then hopefully he sticks around. And if not, like you said, develop and draft someone, which is honestly where I want to go to next, because obviously I know who you want and you got me wanting that same person. Obviously, look, we both want Chris Olave. It'd be great. Right. I still think with the Patriots, before we go to draft, I think, cause I was about to ask about the receiving core, but I forgot about it for a second, was if they, with the receivers, if they either go out and get a wide receiver one or add in another slot guy, I feel like that could fix their problems. Isaiah McKenzie. But with the draft overall, I've been saying this for a while, but I feel like this draft for most teams is going to be more about what you need than what you want. Like, you know how in 2020 Dallas, they didn't necessarily need Lamb, but they got him. I feel like you're going to want to like do the opposite, like how Dallas needed a linebacker or a defensive lineman in 2020. this draft, I feel like, no, you don't want to get the player just because it's the hot name. If he's there and you want him, fine. But I think for a lot of teams, it's going to be more about, look, you got to fill, find out your holes and you got to plug them.
Yeah, for sure. For the Patriots-wise at wide receiver, I think if they were able to upgrade Nelson Agholor and turn it into a true one, they would be – that would be the perfect scenario.
Yeah.
Because Kendrick Bourne's great where he is. Jacoby Myers, I don't know if he can continue to ascend. I don't think he can just because physically he's not there. But what he is still a valuable player to have. He's a security blanket in the slot, which every team needs one, especially the Patriots with the offense they run. So if you're able to upgrade Nelson Agholor, turn that into a true number one receiver, I think Stephon Diggs, in my mind, is who would fit perfectly. He's obviously not leaving Buffalo anytime soon. But, you know, you get a guy like that on the outside, then you're going to be okay. If not, you have to draft and develop somebody, or you have to sign a few guys and see if one of them pans out.
I struggle. A lot of people think about the slot, and they're like, get a slot receiver. But then that bumps everybody up.
Then Jacoby Myers is an outside guy, which that's not where he's going to excel. He's not going to play well on the outside if he moves there full time. And then Kendrick Bourne becomes your number one receiver. And if you want to see somebody's production dip, put a number one cornerback on Kendrick Bourne and watch those numbers fall. I know we all love Kendrick Bourne, but that's just kind of – that's what's going to happen. So the best way is just to go find a number one receiver, which sounds like, oh, yeah, no dirt, right? Find a number one receiver. But that's the direction they need to go. I don't know if there's anybody available this year. Like Allen Robinson's of the world, is he who you want? I don't think so. So my mind goes draft, but also you have so many glaring needs on the defense and so many holes you need to fill that are more pressing than wide receiver that I don't know if you do. Like you said, with needs-wise, I think wide receiver is down towards like 3 or 4 on your list, not 1 or 2. I think that's tackle and corner. So I would say the best course of action is to go sign a guy, give him around Nelson Agholor money, have him compete with Agholor, maybe have both those guys. You slot Jacoby Myers down a level. Get N'Keal Harry off the roster, as much as I love the guy. The time's come. Get him off the roster. You know, you slide everybody down a peg and try to go from there and continue to develop receivers and then look forward to next year where maybe you already fill these holes. Then next year is the year you can go and grab the number one guy.
Exactly.
That was a long answer. I'm sorry.
It's what we're here for. Here for conversation. As I was trying to look up at the same time, and my phone's being slow. Of who like the free agent for wide receivers are. Allen Robinson's on there. The two other guys, I just don't think are realistic. Like Davante Adams, because of how much money he's going to want, and then Chris Godwin as well, because not about the money as well, but how good is he going to be coming off of the ACL? So, and also right. I think he sticks in Tampa. But other players on the list like Will Fuller, Jameson Crowder, T.Y. Hilton, Schuster, like none of those guys I can really see. Like, yeah, the only one.
None of them are number one guys.
Yeah, maybe Mike Williams, if anything. Like, I know the Chargers have the money to spend, but Spanos is cheap.
I mean, the problem with Mike Williams is he's just a faster version of N'Keal Harry, and they hate throwing the ball to N'Keal Harry, so how much are they going to like throwing it to Mike? Like, he's a 50-50 guy, which is great, but he doesn't create separation, and that's what Mac Jones needs, for somebody to create separation, and it's just not what he does. They'll probably sign him to, like, a $50 million contract now that I said that.
And we'll be here in March talking about it. That's just the one. I just want to look at that list quickly because, like I said, there's a lot of the guys that's either it's going to be unrealistic or it's just the money's not there. I do agree with you, though, like, with the draft. I'm going to say a couple players' names in recent memory that have come out that I'd like to see them do for linebacker, kind of like what we've seen, and it's going to be happening this Sunday. Logan Wilson, someone, like, of that kind of caliber, even to – well, the rookie year Pete Warner had for the Saints. Now, I know the Saints didn't have the best year, but Pete Warner was one of those guys towards the end of the year where he kind of showed, like, what his worth and what his value is. Like, even how the Saints brought in someone like a Demario Davis and how he's really made that difference on that side of the ball.
Right, like a third-round pick or something like that, which is, I think, what they have in Cam McGrone. So,
yeah,
that's another thing where you're, like, looking ahead, not just the draft right now, but a guy that they already have on their roster that they can plug into that spot. Maybe they already have.
Yeah, and even, too, with the wide receiver conversation, and I want to say this because I don't know if it's going to make you happy or sad. If they can go out there and get an Amon Ross St. Brown type player, like, you know, that third day, like, that's what I mean, like, that day three. I know I'm killing you. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was basically going to say, if they can get someone on day three in that fifth, sixth round that, like, you know, no one sees, or they just kind of find off the board, or even two, hell, who knows what happens with Trey Nixon this year? Like, the way I feel like wide receivers like that, it's like that pick you want, like, you think about where you're like, you know what, oh, it'd be so awesome to have, like, a Jameson Williams or a Treylon Burks or even Dotson from, I forget, blanking on his first name, from Penn State. John Dotson. Those players would be nice and fine, but look, at the end of the day of the Patriots, am I going to expect them to, you know, 21, trade out of 21, and then move up? Like, look, we did it last year for Barmore, even though that was a rare Belichick move up. But at the same time, too, I feel like if there's no one there that Belichick doesn't want, they're going to move back. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, receiver's nice, too, because it's a spot where if you take two receivers, you take one on day two, one on day three, one of them is bound to produce for you. It's kind of like – that's just kind of the way it works. Amon-Ra St. Brown, if you want a guy like Amon-Ra St. Brown, call me. Hit my line, Bill. Hire me. I'll be your receiver guy. I couldn't have been more right about Amon-Ra St. Brown. It took him like 6 weeks to get there, but he's a hell of a player. And he's a slot guy, which they don't need. They need an outside guy. But, you know, there are plenty of guys for the taking this year. We'll have something coming out on PassPulpit.com, my Twitter page and stuff like that, where you can look. But a lot of quality depth options at receiver and guys that are kind of there to be drafted and developed, not so much as players that you're gonna plug in right away, but guys that you can develop into a good player maybe halfway through their rookie year, like come on strong. A lot of those guys in this draft, so I think they're gonna be okay. I think they're gonna draft a receiver. I don't think it's gonna be early, but say third, fourth round, grab a guy. I think they're gonna be all right.
It's just a shame that blanking on the guy's name, the backer for it's just a damn shame that Will Anderson's not until next year, and it's a shame that Dallas Turner is a freshman. Right. For the linebacker spot. And obviously I know, look, you have your gripes about drafting Alabama players, but I still find there's a way that one of Slade Bolton or Britton Covey is going to be a New England Patriot. Look, I don't make the rules. I just say what they are.
Yeah. Britton Covey is just, he was born to be a Patriot, right?
Yeah.
That guy is unbelievable. And, you know, I've given Gunnar Olszewski a lot of shit. He's been fine. Like he's been a fine player. He's just not, there's no value to what he is as a player. And I'm all about value. Like, get a guy who can do multiple things for you. If you're going to have a punt returner, he better be able to do something else. Gunnar Olszewski doesn't do anything else. So, I don't know if Britton Covey's going to be that guy. I think Britton Covey's the same exact kind of player as Gunnar Olszewski, but a Slade Bolden who can return punts and, you know, you can develop him at the slot position because Jacoby Myers isn't going to be around forever. You know, maybe that's a guy to take a stab at. They're batting like .500 with Alabama players, which sounds bad because you're like, oh, they've only hit on half of them. But in the NFL, you hit on half your picks from, you know, in whatever situation it may be, you're batting .500, you're doing pretty damn well.
Exactly. And even, too, I look at a podcast like, someone who's been on both our shows, but Austin Gale with him on Tailgate, and they both came out when guys like that are saying that, look, the Patriots had a top three draft class from last year. I'm going to take that as a good thing. Like, look. And even, too, last year was a draft where Belichick was getting criticized where it's, oh, you know, his picks don't work out, this, and that. But then last year, the fact that three are already home run hits, I would say, in the sense of, look, Ramondre is that – I always love your Haas comparison with him as LeGarrette Blount. Like, some people like to say blunt force trauma. Look, I know you don't like the boogeyman expression, but for me, blunt force trauma died when LeGarrette Blount left this team. I would say that in all caps, whether it be on Twitter or through text messages. But – it's just, it's good to see that, look, we have a good 1-2 punch at running back. Damian Harris, clear RB1. I think it's just more or less now, like, you're right, figuring out Brandon Bolden, James White, where to go. I prefer White, but I feel like at the same time, I think for as easy it is to sign him, it's as easy to get rid of him, kind of like what we saw with Rex Burkhead last year.
Yeah, it's another spot, too, where you can find a guy from somebody else's roster. And, you know, Belichick knows how to find those guys, especially a running back. Have they ever had a problem finding, you know, solid running backs? That there was a stretch there, like in between Corey Dillon and probably Shane Vereen, where like Kevin Falk was the only good running back on the roster. But it was Kevin Falk. Like, you were fine. You didn't have to worry about that spot, especially in those teams that just didn't run the ball. 07, 08, 09, whatever. So Lawrence Maroney was a miss, but he doesn't have a problem finding running backs, especially third down back types. They've always had one. They've always had a successful one. So I think he'll be able to find one, whether it's bringing Brandon Bolden back for a year and developing somebody, bringing White back and developing somebody, going and drafting somebody, going and signing somebody, like, they'll be able to find somebody in that role fairly easily.
Exactly. Like, obviously, I think quarterback, running back, quarterback besides, I'd say, what to do with Jared Stidham, even though I think he's probably – it depends, I think, if Hoyer retires. I think that's the only thing he's got to bring in, get a good backup in. But running back's one of those situations this year where if you're a Pats fan, don't be concerned. It's going to be – if your running back's the one position we're absolutely fine at. Just a couple more things before we get out of here. I wanted to ask, look, I know it's January 24th to be exact. But if you had to guess right now by looking at the schedule, and not the schedule, but looking at who we play, is it a fair time, or even is it a thing where you can put a true ceiling on this team, or do you want to wait and see like what the draft looks like, what other teams look like? Because there are some teams on that schedule that we don't know exactly what they're going to be in 2022.
There's a lot of those teams. That's the only thing that gives me pause. Like Pittsburgh, I'm confident saying they're probably going to stink next year. They have no idea what they're going to do with quarterback.
Yes.
Green Bay they could either win 13 games or lose 13 games. I have no idea what Rodgers is going to do. Minnesota, what are they going to do in the last year? Cousins, are they going to go all in and try to win one last time and then hit reset after that? Or are they going to try to get ahead of it and, you know, just kind of be a middling team this year? I think that's tough. I would say the ceiling for the Patriots, not even just looking at the schedule, but just looking at what they can become as a team, is – 14. Like, I think they could realistically next year improve the roster enough to where they could find themselves in the AFC Championship. Do I expect that? No, but we're talking about ceiling, right? The absolute highest of highs. In a one-game playoff against Kansas City or Buffalo, can they win one of those games?
Yes.
Will they? Probably not. Do I think they will? No, but they can. So they went toe-to-toe with Buffalo. They beat them this year once. They'll have two chances to play them next year and then maybe play them in the playoffs again.
Kansas City.
And the worst team that they've had in the last 20 years, they went toe-to-toe with Kansas City with Brian Hoyer at quarterback. No matter who's playing, Belichick versus Reed, they're always close games. So ceiling, I think, AFC Championship game. Do I think they ever get farther than that? No chance in my mind. But and then floor, I think there's a chance they miss the playoffs next year. I really do, because they could have a rough offseason with the amount of things that they need to do. You know, not everything's going to turn up. So low floor, very high ceiling, I think.
Exactly. I'd have to say if I had a floor, I would say 8-9 or 9-8, I think. I can't see them losing double digits next year. But if I had to say ceiling right now, I could say – I looked at the schedule. I said, I think best for the regular season is 12-5. I don't think it'll happen. I think – 9-8, 10-7, 11-6, one of those three are the more realistic result. But I think this will be a team that, you know, could compete for a playoff spot and maybe do like a 2019 Titan-esque run where, you know, you go in there and you surprise some teams and then all of a sudden, boom, you're in the AFC Championship game. Will it happen? Probably not.
Cincinnati this year.
Yeah, Cincinnati this year. I only said Tennessee because Tennessee was a true wildcard team. That's why.
Right.
Yeah, but even though, same thing with Cincinnati where fourth seed, beat Vegas, you go to Tennessee, you basically neutralize a returning Derrick Henry, even only the one touchdown, partially to blame for that as well as the offensive coordination of one Todd Downing. But all in all, if you're a Patriots fan, I wouldn't panic or worry just because we did lose to the Bills. We got our asses absolutely kicked, 47-17. Look, they had a perfect game, and the way I view that game is simple. Like I said, Michigan beating Ohio State, and 20 years of pent-up frustration and anger just getting let out on someone all at once.
Yeah, for sure. I agree on all fronts.
Yeah, no, exactly. But I think that's it. I don't think there's really much to add. I just had to throw in the wide receiver thing quickly. But look, if you're a Pats fan, it's going to be an interesting offseason. I can't see them fumbling. I can't see them, like, fumbling the bag, excuse me, for what they do with the free agency. Like, there's probably going to be some players that go, though, that some fans are just not ready to see go. But in the long run, it's going to be what's best for the team. It's one of those things where it's like when you get fired from a job you really like, you know, where it sucks and it is what it is, but you know, look, hey, the grass could be greener on the other side. You just got to think positively if you're a Pats fan going forward. And then two, look, our biggest answer from last offseason is to solve already. We know that we have a solid quarterback in New England, and that's compared to what a lot of other teams have to go through in a draft class and a potential free agency where we don't know what's going to happen with the quarterbacks. it's good. It's not like I'd rather much be in our position right now than be a Denver Bronco fan, say, where, look, you have all the pieces solved but the biggest one. And when you don't have the biggest one solved, it's a difference between winning, I say, 7 games to winning 10 games.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. You know, in the grand scheme of things, if you look at all of the teams in the league and you put a number on the amount of moves that they need to make to be a contender, I'd say the Patriots are in the top half of, you know, the least amount of moves. Like, I think they're like 3 or 4 moves away, truly. They're big moves. They're like, a lot of things need to fall into place for them to happen and turn out. But you're in a better situation than most, and that's all you can ask for.
100%. It's as simple as that. Look, at the end of the day, this team's going to be fine. They're going to be a team that come next December, they're going to be in the talk. They're going to be in the playoff hunt or probably playoff positioning. So it's not like one of those things. If they did miss next year, it would suck, but I don't think it's absolute worst case scenario. I think worst case scenario would be, like I said, finishing under 500. But look, this team's got a long way to go. We'll see what happens. It's exciting. But you know what? Just enjoy it for now. And for as much as I love stressing in the playoffs, just enjoy these next few weeks, because in about a month's time, we're going to be begging for football, even though the USFL is not exactly it.
Yeah, I went full hardcore into the XFL 2 years ago. I can't do that to myself again. I can't break my own heart again. So football is over for me, you know, February 13th, whenever the Super Bowl is, until August.
Yeah, that's the best way to look at it, even though the NFL is a season where, look, that's why I do a fall podcast over any other sport, even though my number one's hockey, is because it's a sport you can talk about all year round.
Yep, year round. Draft season, baby. Already, I'm in.
Oh, love to see it. Love to see it. Well, you folks, that's going to do it for episode number 148 of YWC Football Talk. It's been a blast getting to talk to Keegan Stiefel once again. You can find all his work on patspulpit.com. At Keegan Stiefel, like it says, if you are watching on YouTube, remember all episodes will be streamed through StreamYard now. Links right over there, right over there. If you see my horrible pointing job, Keegan's doing it for me. But anyway, this has been presented by SidelineShop.ca, guys. If you need a jersey, no matter the sport, contact the guys at SidelineShop.ca. I'll see you guys on Thursday for a full Championship Sunday preview show. And also, guys, I got some stuff coming up in the works that you're not going to want to miss out on. Have a good one, everybody, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Thanks, Keegan, once again for coming on.
Do, Did, Will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first 5 episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all 3 of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.
Hi, I'm Logan Anderson, host of the Say the Damn Score podcast. On my show, I deep dive into the sports broadcasting business by, you guessed it, talking to sportscasters. The show has featured big names like Bob Costas, Kenny Albert, and Vern Lundquist, as well as many up-and-coming broadcasters who you may not know yet, but you will know soon. Whether you're looking for professional development as a sportscaster, different career paths, or if you just want to be entertained by hearing some of the best storytellers in the world tell their own stories, this podcast is for you. You can subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can visit our website, saythedamnscore.com.